We continue the shiur in Gemara. Today we start a new Masechta, a new Gemara called Idios. The word Idios is a machlekes, a debate among the Mefarshim and the commentaries as to whether this word is Idios or Idios. Idios meaning the best, the chosen, the select words of the rabbis of the Talmud, the Gemara, or Idios meaning the testimony, where the rabbis of the Gemara testified as to the decisions about specific laws in the Gemara. There is something special about this Gemara, and therefore it requires a preface. It requires a story told in the Gemara to relate as to why this Gemara is outstanding. Why is it special? Isn't every statement in the Torah, in the Gemara, testimony by the rabbis of the Gemara? Isn't every word of the Gemara the best, the chosen? Isn't it illegal, the Gemara says, illegal to call one page of Gemara better, nicer than a second? The answer is this story will illustrate and explain. The Gemara says that Rabban Gamliel, the word Rabban means chief rabbi of the Sanhedrin. Supreme Court, 70 rabbis who were located at the entrance to the Beis HaMikdash. Chief rabbi was Rabban Gamliel, and he was very strict in his rulings. Of course, he had the authority. The Gemara says that one time, an incident occurred which was sort of a repetition. One of the greatest rabbis alive then, this was an era where the greatest lights of Torah shone forth. Era of Rabbi Akiva, Yeshua, Rabbi Moses ben Azariah. And this was the third time the same type of incident transpired, where Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya, who was known as the Hakim de Yehudoi, the wisest of all of the wise sages then, seemingly was hurt. His feelings were hurt by Rabbi Gamliel. First two times, the Gemara says nothing was done about it. But the third time, there were repercussions. And this is what happened. The Gemara says that one student, a young rabbi, asked Rabbi Yehoshua a question. Question in law. We know that it is required for every Jew to daven three times a day. Shacharis, Mincha, and Maariv. However, there is a difference between the two tefillahs, Shacharis and Mincha, and third evening tefillah of Maariv. Shacharis Mincha are compulsory tefillahs for everyone. Maariv is questionable. We find, note that for Shacharis and Mincha, there is a repetition of the Shmona Esrei. The Chazan, the Shliach Tzibur, repeats the Shmona Esrei. Why? To cover anyone who does not know how to daven himself. Since it is compulsory, each person must be covered. The Chazan repeats the Shmona Esrei. In the event that there is someone who does not know how to daven, he covers for him. Maariv may be optional. This was the question. This young student asked Rabbi Yeshua privately, what is the din? Is Tfilas Arvis Rishus optional? Or is it Chayva, is it compulsory, just as Shacharis and Mincha? Yeshua replied that din is absolutely reshus, which means it's optional, and therefore you may daven it. It's advisable to daven, but since it's not compulsory, there is no repetition of the Shmona Esrei by the Chazan. This student came to Rabbi Gamliel. His desire for knowledge was not filled. He was not positive yet. He wanted to be sure. He wanted to be certain about this law. He picked on this special question, selected this question for a reason. He came to Ramiel and asked Ramiel, chief rabbi, what is the din, the case of Marv? Is it compulsory or optional? Ramiel stated emphatically, it is definitely compulsory. No one can evade this. This student said to Ramiel, but I have a law stated by Rabbi Yoshua who said that it's optional. And Leo said, fine, sit down. This was in the yeshiva before class began. He said, wait until all the students enter into the Beis HaMedrash, the yeshiva. We'll bring this question up. When they were all in, Leo said, is there any question? This student stood and asked, is Tfilas Arvis optional or compulsory? Ramiel said to him, the answer is that it is compulsory. However, I would like to inquire among those present, is there anyone who disagrees with me? Rabbi Yeshua replied, you probably mean me. My answer is no, I do not disagree. Ramiel said, I have word that it's different, that you're sort of backtracking. Fact is, someone stated that you declared this halacha, this din already, as being optional. And Yeshua said, in that case then, I cannot deny it. I must admit that I did say it is optional, against your decision. Ramiel said to Rabbi Yeshua, in that case then, stand and don't move. You're being penalized now. You're going against the decision of the leader of the court. Throughout the entire shir, remain standing in one spot. Rabbi Yeshua stood there, and Ramiel started to give the shir, and there arose a murmur from all the rabbis present. And they said, stop this shir. We refuse to go further. Time has come for us to object, to defend the honor of Rabbi Yeshua, because this is the third time he has been publicly embarrassed by Rabbi Gamliel. Therefore, we have come to a decision. The multitude of rabbis have decided to depose, to dethrone Rabbi Gamliel. Though he is the Nasi, the president, the head, the chief rabbi, though he is legally, rightfully, we want to retain the leadership because he is a direct descendant of King David, yet, because of his actions, we've decided that we do not want him as the chief rabbi, and we have a right to request the change if we can find one to take his place who is at least equal to or superior to him in knowledge. The question arose, whom can they select to take his place? It's very dangerous to change chief rabbis, because you're dealing with ones who are so holy that a word, an angry word from a tzaddik can cause destruction and death. They said, we must have one who is just as powerful to combat, to counteract any word by Rabbi Gamliel. They discussed the potential candidates. They said, we could choose Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua is certainly as learned as Rabbi Gamliel, even more so. He has proven it now because he stated the law correctly. Marav is not compulsory. It's optional. However, they said we cannot give Rabbi Yeshua the crown of Nasi because it would look very bad. It would give the impression that his whole purpose, his motive in arguing this law was in order to obtain the presidency, the throne. Because it would look badly, therefore we cannot elect Rabbi Yeshua as the chief rabbi, as the Nasi. Next in line, they said Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is by far the greatest rabbi, the only individual, factually, the only rabbi in all of history who was compared in wisdom to Moshe Rabbeinu. This, the Gemara says, that when the Torah tells us that Lakam Navi Eid Kamesher, and never arose again a prophet as great as Moshe Rabbeinu, Navi Lakam, not a prophet, but a Chacham, a wise tzaddik, did arise, and that was Rabbi Akiva. And they said, surely Rabbi Akiva would be the one that is most fit to take over as Nasi. And they decided against this because of the danger. It was a risk. The Akiva was a Chacham. He was a tzaddik. But it is a known fact that a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, has more power than a tzaddik who has no heritage. Rabbi Akiva was the son of a ger, convert. So he had no family tree to draw on in greatness. And Leo could call upon all the powers of the past, his family tree, dating way back to David HaMelech. But he said, therefore, it's dangerous because Rabbi Gamliel might, in anger, say a harsh word against Rabbi Akiva, and this might come true. Rabbi Akiva will be harmed. Therefore, it's inadvisable to select Rabbi Akiva. They finally decided upon Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who was very learned, very great Chacham, was also very wealthy. Leo was wealthy, and of course there's a chance that his servants might want to bribe the king. At that time they were under the Roman king's rule, might bribe the king to force the people to replace whoever they chose, to recall having a Leo. Muslim Azariah was so wealthy that he could match any bribe by the servants of Rabbi Gamliel, in case it should come to that. And third, he has background because he has a family tree. He is direct descendant, 10th generation of Ezra HaSefer. Ezra HaSefer was the one who wrote the decrees about Kriyas HaTeda. He is the one who was mostly instrumental in the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. Ezra the scribe. And of course, as it is brought, we mentioned this, we hinted at it, that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah not only was a descendant of Ezra HaSefer, he was an exact identical twin to, he had the same features, looked exactly like Ezra HaSefer himself. And therefore, they said our choice is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who will now take over as the Nasi, the new Nasi. Well, they came to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and they asked him, would you accept this position? His reply was, I must ask the advice of my wife. One of the strangest replies possible. You ask your wife's advice as to what color the curtains in the living room should be, or as to what the menu should be for a gathering. But this is purely a yeshiva, a Torah inyan case, which does not relate to his wife at all. What difference would it make to her, or why should she have the say to decide whether he is the fit to be to accept the position of Nasi? A number of reasons given for this. One, basically, the Farshim say is that the Nasi was compelled to absent himself from his home for longer periods. This cannot be done without the permission of the wife. And therefore, before accepting this position, you would have to have her permission. More important, though, the main reason was, Lesben Azariah was a tzaddik. And there were two things, one a benefit, and one was a chisaron, a shortcoming. Benefit was that the Gemara says when a person becomes a nasi, it is like becoming a king. It is like becoming a chassan. One is going to get married has a very special privilege, a gift from heaven. Chassan, Kala, both receive the greatest possible gift. On the day of their wedding, they receive a complete pardon from heaven, a pardon for all sins committed the entire lifetime. So it's much more important today even than Yom Kippur, which is only for 1 year. A Nasi too. A Nasi is elected as the chief rabbi of the Sanhedrin. On that day, he too receives a special pardon from heaven for anything committed during his entire lifetime. That's a tremendous gain. At the same time, there is also a question mark, because it very possibly could chas v'sholom lead to gaiva, to haughtiness. The power that goes with this, the honors that go with this, the honors are such that every person, wherever he goes, must stand up and remain standing when the nasi goes by. So this could turn his head. It is possible that he might acquire this evil characteristic of gaiva, of haughtiness, conceit. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah feared this very much. He was afraid to accept this position, lest he acquire this haughtiness. He could not tell within himself whether, just by being notified already, he now was a bal gaiva, chas v'sholom. So he decided the best test is, the Gemara says that one who is a bal gaiva, one who has conceit, is so detested by the average person that even his own wife acquires a dislike of him. His own wife dislikes him. So he said, I must ask my wife what? Whether I should accept the position? No. Whether she dislikes me all of a sudden. If she says, I've stopped liking you, this will be a sign that I've acquired haughtiness because of this offer, and I will reject it. But if she states that there's a change in my attitude, no change in her feelings towards me, it means that I have not been affected by this offer, and I could accept the offer without worrying, without fear, lest I acquire this evil trait. This is why Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah went to discuss this with his wife, and she said to him, of course, it's worth accepting the position, though we never can tell how long you will retain it. If Leah lost it, you might lose it too shortly. He accepted the position, and there was a case of embarrassment on his part because it looked strange. He was very young. He was only 18 years old at the time. According to the Yerushalmi, he was 16. Probably says he was 18 years old, and being 18 years old, to have to face all these great rabbis, these elders, old sages, to stand in front of them, to teach them, is embarrassing. That night, Gemara says that a miracle occurred, and he grew a long white beard. And therefore, in the beginning of the Haggadah, we find the statement, Omar Elazar ben Azariah, Harei Ani, you recall, Harei Ani Kaven Shivim Shana. I am now like 70 years. He didn't say, I am 70 years. He said, I am like 70 years. Why like 70 years? Because I look like 70 years. I'm only 18. The miracle occurred that I should not be embarrassed, so I look like one of 70 years. Shivim is Sevor. That means old age, and therefore I am now fit to stand in front of the rabbis of the Sanhedrin. Arizal says, a deeper meaning, Arizal says that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a Gilgul, Therefore, he was fit to be the Nasi because he was a Gilgal reincarnation of Shmuel HaNavi, Shmuel the prophet. Direct Gilgal, Shmuel the prophet. If you recall, Shmuel the prophet at the time of his passing was exactly 52 years old. Rosman Azariah said, I cannot tell you the secret openly, but those who understand will grasp this, will detect it from my words. Hare ani ke, like, I am like what? Ben is 52. Like, because I lived before 52 years, Shivim Shona, together with my present age, I am 70 years old. So the Gemara says that he was chosen. He took over the leadership immediately. His first act was a major stroke in increasing the study of Torah at that time, leading to the name of this Gemara. His first act was, until then, there was a guard at the door of the yeshiva. This was the main yeshiva. There was a guard stationed there by order of Rabbi Gamliel. His order was to this guard, do not allow anyone to enter at random. The person wants to learn, test him first. See if he is fit to be a student in this yeshiva. Don't test his knowledge. Test his character. If he is pure inside and outside, that means that the words he says are the same as what he thinks in his heart. His heart and mouth are the same. Inside and outside, he's the same. He's not two-faced. If he's sincere and honest, then permit him to come in. But if he is not a sincere person, keep him out. And this, of course, limited the admission to the yeshiva. Rabbi Azariah, his first act was to remove this guard and said, everyone may enter. On that day, the first day of his reign as Nasi, there were added, the Gemara says, a debate as to whether there were 400 or 700 benches were added to the yeshiva. That many more students, they had to bring that many benches in to accommodate the additional students that came to learn. Imagine how much more Torah was spread then, just in volume alone, the number of students. But when Leo heard this, he saw, he was present too, of course, and Leo accepted all this in full modesty. He bowed his head and said, I come now as a student, I accept the authority of the new chief rabbi. But he was sort of broken-hearted about the fact that he saw all these benches added. This meant that he had deprived all these students until now from the study of Torah. That night, he had a dream. In his dream, he saw broken pitchers. Pitchers that were white on the outside and black on the inside, which was a symbol telling him that these additional students that came in are like broken pitchers. They're not pure. So don't worry about the fact that you deprived them. They weren't fit to come in anyhow. Elar says that this dream was sent from heaven only to appease Gamliel's feelings. In fact, though, it was a wonderful act in allowing these students to come in, because Torah must be spread. Allow all students to enter, give them the opportunity to learn and to develop. Result was that Rabbi Gamliel begged the pardon of Rabbi Yeshua, and the rest of the story is not pertinent here, just the fact that the final results were they had a problem with what to do now, because once Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was crowned, you can't just depose them without reason. They decided upon a compromise that they would divide the calendar to 2 weeks and 1 week. Two-thirds of the time, Rabbi Leo would act as Nasi, and one third of the time Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And that's why we find the Gemara a number of times when a statement is made or quoted and the question is asked, Shabbos Shomi Hoysa, whose week was that? Who was the Nasi at that time? This refers to this question, this point about the dividing of the time. There are different Girsos, the Gemara, that say that it wasn't 2 and 1, it was 3 and 1. He divided the month into 3 weeks and 1 week. In any event, the majority of the time, according to all opinions, was given to Rabbi Gamliel, since he was by birth the true Nasi, and because of the fact that Elazar ben Azariah had become Nasi already, they didn't want to deprive him completely, so he was given the honors part of each month. Now, the Gemara says, question arises, by the way, a student who had asked the question in the first place, a young student came to ask this question of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel, is Maariv compulsory or is it optional? The student has no name. The Gemara says, yes, he has a name. This student was Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoiza. Nosanzal says, we learn something very important from that. We'll see that in a moment. Let's first go back to the statement about the fact, the Gemara says that there were 400 benches added or 700 benches added. Now, aside from the hidden statement in Kabbalah, which we cannot enter into now, but why does it say benches were added? Why not students were added? Tell me them. So many, if there were 10 students to a bench, would be 4,000 students. If there were 3, would be 1,200 students. Why not give the number of students rather than the number of benches? Isn't that more logical? The answer is, because of the fact that the Gemara says Rabbi Gamliel was the epitome of teaching Torah with the highest degree of respect for the Torah itself. As long as Rabbi Gamliel was Nasi, during his time, the study of Torah was done in a standing position. People did not sit down to study Torah. Just as the greatest part of the davening is done standing, there is more kavana, there is more feeling, more inspiration, so too a respect for the Torah that was being learned. People stood while learning Torah. After Gamliel's time, then they became weak, their concentration waned, and they were forced to sit in order to be able to concentrate. Therefore, the wording is used about the benches rather than the students. Same thing we can understand the case of, very similarly, case of the story of the golden calf. When the golden calf was made, and this was done at the time that Moshe Rabbeinu was in heaven, receiving the Torah from Hashem. Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, go down, lech reid, go down because your people have built the golden calf. Moshe Rabbeinu went down, took with him the tablets, came down, and when he saw the golden calf, he smashed the tablets to the ground. Does that mean that he did not believe until he saw with his own eyes? Hashem testified, Hashem stated, that the Jews have built the golden calf. Why did he take the tablets at that moment? Rather than take them and smash them, he should have refused them in the first place. The answer is, as long as there was purity, Luchos tablets stood for the study of Torah. As long as there was a purity on the part of the Jews, then the Luchos themselves could stand. Torah could be in an erect position. the honor of the Torah was erect. The moment that he came down, and not he, but the Luchos, witnessed the sight of the golden calf, they themselves dropped, they fell from his hands, became heavy, and they were broken. This means that the Kavod of Torah is in a standing position, and this shows, the Gemara Saita says, that this was done until the time of Gamaliel. He was very strict about this. After his time, the Torah was done by yeshiva in a sitting position. Now, as we said, the want to ask this question about the Tfilas Maariv. Was Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal? Why was it so important to him in the first place? Why pick on this question and why pursue it so diligently at such expense? The answer is that what is meant by Maariv is optional. Optional means any person could say, today I want to daven Maariv, tomorrow I don't. I have my choice. Surely it's not so. The fact is that a person must daven Maariv. The din says that it is optional, in a sense, only that if there is something very vital to be done, a very vital mitzvah, a person may forego Maariv to perform the other mitzvah. It's what's meant by optional. Whereas he could not do it in the case of Shachris and Mincha. Now, of course, the Din says too, the Rif says that once this optional item, Maariv, was adopted and accepted by Jews, it has now become compulsory. So today, Maariv is no longer optional. Today you cannot say, I want to give charity tonight, and thereby be free from davening Maariv. It is too late. Once it has been adopted and accepted, it has become a compulsory item, just as Shachris and Mincha. But not as compulsory as Shachris and Mincha in the full sense. In other words, there still is no ruling that we have to have the Shemona Esrei repeated by the Chazan. For Rabbi Shimon Yochai Zal, though, this question was vital. Because the Gemara says that in case of a person who devotes his life entirely to the study of Torah and nothing else, has no other interest, no business interest, no other concern whatsoever in life but to spend his every moment in the study of Torah, then he is exempt from tefillah. That tefillah which is optional. He was very interested to know, must he daven Maariv? Or could he spend his evenings, his nights, completely immersed in the study of Torah and be exempt from this item? The answer, of course, was that his reshus optional, which was vital to Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal. Nosson Zal points out, there is a Gemara, Rabbeinu Zal brings it in the beginning of the Likutei Maran. The Gemara says, K'shenichnesu Rabbi Seinu b'kerem b'yavne. Whenever we find in the Gemara a statement, Boi Bayoim, that day this statement was made, it means that day when Elaz ben Azariah was chosen as Nasi. Because on that day, the Gemara says, the entire Gemara Idios was learned. This Gemara we're starting now, beginning to end, was covered on that day. It was a very special day. They discussed the most difficult questions out, the ones that had not been resolved until then, and they resolved these questions then. That's why this Gemara is so special, that's why this day is so specially chosen. Two, it says that the rabbis entered the Kerem B'Yavne, the vineyard in Yavne, means the semicircle where the Sanhedrin sit in a position where they could see, everyone can see everyone else, sitting in a semicircle, each person can see everyone around him. The closeness, the oneness, the unity among them, And this term is used for this special day when there was a perfect solidarity and unity on the part of all the rabbis. Gemara says on that day, the rabbis made a statement. They said there's going to come a very sad time in Jewish history when the Torah itself will be forgotten for Jews. Chas v'shalom will come a time Torah will be lost, forgotten. Shimon Yechoyezal disputed this fact and said, I say, Kilesi Shochach mi Pizanai, the Torah will never be forgotten from the Jews. Beitazal points out that it will not be forgotten because this Pusik, Kilesi Shochach mi Pizanai, will not be forgotten from the children of Israel, but the wording, the last letters of that sentence is the word Yechoy. So he meant to imply that because of the child, the son of Rabbi Yochai, Shimon Yochai Zal, he's a chus of his greatness, his writings, which of course is the Zohar HaKadosh. Zohar means light. The light of the Zohar HaKadosh will constantly shine and make certain that the Torah will always remain. His chus will be the one to keep the light of Torah shining. Now that's a chus is so great that it's more superior to that than all the other rabbis. How did he acquire a greatness that can outshine the knowledge spreading of Torah by all the other sages? Vassenzal says we see here the fact that on that day there were 400 or 700 benches of rabbis added to the yeshiva. On that day, there were numerous, countless statements of Torah that were resolved, ones that had been in the dark until then. On that day, there was an increase in the study and knowledge of Torah that had never been experienced before. Who was responsible for this tremendous increase in the study and knowledge of Torah? Last words of the story, who was the student who seemingly instigated all this, who caused all this to take place? That was Rabbi Shimon ben Yechoyezal. He brought all this about. The entire Gemara Idios could be attributed to the credit of Rabbi Shimon Yechoyezal. Idios, testimony, Idios, the best, the chosen, the select words of the Gemara, all due to the credit of Rabbi Shimon Yechoyezal. Therefore it was fitting. He said that my zechus, not of course spoken other than the most modest term, my zechus means that my effort, my desire, my tremendous desire, modestly, to spread Torah to the Jews, to see that this Torah remains, that the light, the torch of Torah remains eternal, the Torah will remain, never be forgotten. With this we understand now the meaning of this Gemara, titled the name of the Gemara, Idios, how it was formed, how it came about. And therefore the Gemara in Idios, the first chapter, gives us two statements. One's two that will elaborate and explain the two mysteries in general about the laws of the Torah. First statement is, we find cases where we have two leading luminaries among the rabbis of the Gemara, Hillel and Shammai. Hillel the elder, Shammai his colleague. Hillel was so great, the Gemara says that he had 80 students. 80 students, and the smallest was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, was the Nasi of the Sanhedrin. He was the rabbi of Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol and Rabbi Yeshua, this Rabbi Yeshua. This rabbi of these great names we discussed now, who were the rabbis of Rabbi Akiva, he was the smallest of the students of Hillel HaZaken. So Hillel and Shammai were two tremendously powerful figures in the Gemara. But no matter how great they were, how great they were in Torah and knowledge, they too were bound by the laws of the Torah. laws of the Torah are that if ever there is a debate among rabbis in the Gemara, among rabbis in the Shulchan Aruch, among rabbis of any generation, always the rule is, the Torah law is, that the majority rules. If there is a multitude against an individual, we go according to the majority. And therefore the Gemara says we have a statement about a certain law. This of course was discussed that day. They were speaking about in which Hillel made a statement, Shammai made a statement, and the vast majority of rabbis argued against this. They disputed the statement, and of course the law remains like the majority. The Gemara asks now in Idios a very pertinent question. Since the law remains like the majority, then why bring up this whole discussion, this whole debate? Why not get right to the point? You have a law to state, say it. This is the law, as the Chachamim, the majority of rabbis said. Why bring in the fact that there was a debate in the first place? Why mention the names of Hillel and Shammai in vain? Why say that they made a statement which turned out to be contrary to law? The law does not remain as they said, the law remains like the Chachamim. Why not just say briefly, law stated as follows by rabbis of the Gemara? Here the Gemara says, this was written in this manner, stated in this manner, testified to in this manner, to teach us for all future generations that no person should ever be stubborn, should ever say, accept my opinion because I will not waver, I will not bend. Person must be flexible. Person thinks that he is right. If he thinks that his knowledge is superior to others, if he is positive about his statement being just, still he should allow himself to be subdued to the will and decision of the majority. If he thinks that he's very great, very superior, let him remind himself about the greatness of Hillel and Shammai. And surely next to them he will pale away completely. If these two, who were called the Ovei Sa'olam, the fathers of the world, they were modest enough to accept the decision of the majority, they did not remain stubborn and insist that their opinion was the correct one. If they surrendered to the will of the majority, then surely every person in subsequent generations, no matter how great he is, even if he is a leader of that generation, if the majority opinion is contrary to theirs, then they must surrender to the will of the majority. This, of course, does not pertain to laws that already have been resolved in the past. No one, no majority, can ever argue against that. You have a large number of rabbis today, reform or conservative, who decide to vote against the laws of the Torah, chas v'shalom, and of course, they are meaningless. They are worthless. They do not count whatsoever. The question only of something that comes up, something that rises up in a new item, where there is a discussion as to what the opinion can be derived from the Gemara, and if the Svara, the logic of one, dictates that it is a positive matter, the logic of the majority states negative, and that one, though he is superior, should give in to the majority. This is what we learn from Hillel and Shammai, two of the leading rabbis of all time. This is the first lesson stated in the Gemara in Idios, a Gemara which deals with his great tzaddikim, and a Gemara from which every person should learn as to the modesty of these great rabbis and as to the power of Emunah. Emunah and the word of Hashem, Emunah and the word of Torah. This is something that we should resolve to acquire, to strengthen ourselves with.